Good evening. Welcome to your Thursday Night Live. Should be Wednesday Night Live. Excuse me, Thursday Night Live. And I think that this is interesting because, of course, everybody's looking with a fair amount of horror at the US GDP, but it's doing better than Japan and the UK. Japan, the company's debt-to-GDP ratio has increased from 238% in 2020 to 260% in 2022, representing a 22 percentage point increase. U.S. debt-to-GDP ratio grown from 107% in 2020 to 121% in 2022, which is a 14 percentage point increase. United Kingdom, the UK's debt-to-GDP ratio has risen from 84% in 2020 to 102% in 2022, showing an 18 percentage point increase. So, exciting times. It's funny how everyone seems to be panicking over a spending issue in democracy, but of course, there will always be a spending issue in democracy. Democracies will always eat themselves because the population gets trained into laziness and entitlement by wanting something for nothing, and no politician can get voted in on fiscal restraint. Because you need more than fiscal restraint. You need to cut your spending savagely to the point where you'd have two generations with virtually no benefits paying off the drunken debt-based boomer con. And none of this is a problem with the voters. None of this is a problem with the politicians. It is the system. You base a system on coercion, that system will fail. And until people recognize the violence inherent in the system, then it's just going to keep happening. But we're doing our best to educate people so that, and you know, we are more right over time. I'm more right over time. And sometimes when you scream that there's a big problem coming, you know, when there's been seven seasons of summer, and then you say, winter's coming, and people are like, you crazy, man. You crazy. What do you think? Winter's coming. Madness. Then it starts to get a little colder, and you're like, ah, it's just a little cold snap. I remember my granddaddy used to talk about this in The Endless Summer Planet. And then it gets a little colder, and people are like, ooh, nipples up. It's a little chilly. And then you find your dogs frozen to the ground, and it's like, hey, maybe that guy who said winter was coming might be right. Let's go talk to him again. Those who were seen to be dancing were thought crazy by those who could not hear the music, and those who are warning of dire times ahead are thought to be crazy by those who believe that reality can be suspended on the basis of passion and need. You need food. Food doth not appear. You must, in fact, work for it. And, I mean, I can only be right about so many things before eventually people are going to be like, hey, that guy has something to say. It's right about Haiti, right about Bitcoin, right about global warming, right about the vax, right about the government spending, right about the loss of freedoms and changing demographic. I mean, just right. And eventually people will notice, though, that may not be our generation, right?
Hey.
So, yeah, people believe that complaining will solve problems. That being upset and being angry will produce resources. But it's generally a bit more of a female perspective to say that upset will gain resources, right? So, I mean, that was also right about Trump being elected. You know, politics became boring because it was too easy. It was too easy to predict, and there was no particular challenge. Ben Shapiro got chewed out this week on X for saying that the U.S. Social Security is unsustainable as it is a perpetual Ponzi scheme and that retirement is not worth it. Well, Benny Ben. Not so good with the math. Benny Ben, a smart guy, obviously. He's really, really great at taking on woke 18-year-olds in university, but not so great when it comes to basic math. So what he says is that when Social Security was put into place, the life expectancy was the mid-60s. Now it's nearly 80, so people are getting an extra, you know, 14 or 15 years, and that's unsustainable. But that's not it's not true. It's just not true. It's an understandable mistake, but you only have to think about it for a moment. The issue with life expectancy was not that people on average only lived to 64. The issue with life expectancy was that babies and children died en masse before the age of 5, right? And if you lived to 20, then you were probably going to live to 80. If you got past childhood, so the child-to-infant mortality, toddler mortality was bringing down the average. So it's not really the same. Now, I mean, of course, it's a Ponzi scheme. Well, it's actually, it's an insult to Ponzi schemes to call government retirement plans a Ponzi scheme, because Ponzi schemes are voluntary and retirement plans are not. Of course, everybody knows that there's no money, right? It was just taken from you. It was spent on, you know, what politicians do. They reward their friends and they punish their enemies. And it was spent on all of that. There's no money. And so now younger people who are broke are taxed to pay for the wealthiest generation in the history of the world, which is the boomers. And of course, it's predatory and it's ugly and it's vicious. And that's the nature of the system. So what he did say, what Ben did say, was that people seem to die shortly after they retire. And I've heard stories of people who retire and then die. But a lot of times that happens because people find out that their health is seriously compromised. Like they've got some illness, some ailment, they've got, you know, 5 years to live, 3 years to live or whatever. So they retire because they want to enjoy their last few years of life. And so they retire and then they die. I personally, I don't think I could stand retirement. I think I would feel quite depressed to wake up and have a not what for in my day. I think that would be, I don't know, it would be kind of odd or awkward or strange to have a not what for. Do you ever have this, like, because I'm 57 now and I can see the end of life, I can see where it's going to lead and where the cutoff is. You know, when you get that feeling at the end of a movie, you know, it's the end of the movie, it fades out and it's like, okay, here come the credits. Now, I'm not quite at the credits stage, but I ain't at the opening credits either. And I ain't at the car chase in the middle or where the guy gets tied to a chair or where the woman tries to get the guy back by running to the airport or every other movie cliche that you can. And actually, my daughter and I did a really funny movie, a really funny podcast about movie cliches a couple of years ago. You should check it out. So for me, it's like I could pick up this book, but why? What would I read the book for, right? So in the past, I just, oh, this looks interesting. But now I'm like, okay, well, what's the purpose of reading this book? When you have less time, you have more focus and more purpose, which I think works. So for me, if I were to wake up and look at the day and say, I don't know what any of this is particularly for. Now, of course, I can hang with my wife. My daughter is going to be out of the house in a couple of years, so she'll be grown up. And yeah, or health issues prevent you from working, and then that kills you. Yes, for sure. So but here's the thing, like the idea that my particular retirement plans or ideas, the idea that I would be vainglorious enough to think that my situation applies to other people is completely bizarre to me, right? So if you've known people who've done physical labor, and by physical labor, I don't just mean like making big rocks into small rocks. I mean, you know, plumber, electrician, carpenter, like people who are doing physical labor. I mean, that shit wears you out, man. That stuff wears you out. I don't know if you've ever done physical labor for long periods of time. Man, it's tiring. And it's not like working out. It's like not particularly health inducing because you wear the crap out of your joints and you get bad backs and you get like, it's tough. It's hard. It's hard work. And of course, the point of retirement was if you start your physical labor often at the age of 15, right? 15 to 65 is half a century. So if you've done half a century of physical labor, you're worn out, man. a 50-year-old physical, like a man who's been laboring for 50 years is like a car that's been driven for a quarter century. I don't care how much you've maintained it. That crap is falling apart. So, of course, retirement was, you should stop doing this physical labor because it's going to injure you and you're going to make mistakes and then you're going to have big, giant medical bills. So you might as well get a pension because it's going to save your medical bills. I wonder what your show would be like in 10 or 20 years if you're still doing it. If I'm alive, I'm still doing it. If I'm alive, I'm sure I will be 10 to 20. 20 years would put me at 77. Yeah, I'll be alive. So, and it's funny to think that, I mean, I met my wife 21 years ago. In 21 years, I'll be 78. I mean, I think I'll make it into my late 80s. I think I'll make it into my late 80s, which is, you know, another 30 years. 30 years ago, I was 27. So, you know, it's a long stretch of time. I don't know for sure, but that's my general, my mom's still alive and she was a smoker and so on. So, I think my dad made it to 80, but he also smoked pipes. I don't know if he quit later on in life, but so I will still be doing the show in 10, 20 years, 30 years. I mean, why would I not? It's so much fun. It's so deep and rich and meaningful and powerful and engaging and enjoying and of great value, particularly to the future, right? Particularly to the future. I aim, of course, you know, whether you agree or not, but my aim is to be like the Oracle of Delphi that people can go back to say, what the hell went wrong? Why did we end up in such a crap storm? And that is the that is sort of the idea. Not smoking and drinking can do a lot for life expectancy. Yes, not sitting, not being isolated, stretching, quality of life matters a lot as well. And I'm just not, I don't know if you've seen these 80-year-old grandmothers in the gym, I'm just not going to be old and brittle. I mean, assuming that I can maintain my exercise regime, which, I mean, I just did a half hour of heavy weights right before the show because I realized my energy was a little lower over the last couple of shows and I've got to, will Stephpot take over after you stop doing the show? I would imagine. I mean, A, I can imagine. B, are you sure that hasn't already happened? Blip, 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 blip. I'm buffering. So, and can you imagine what AI is going to be like in 20 years? AI will have to be more savagely contained than the internet because it will produce such profound truths that are unarguable that it will be like the Oracle of Delphi. It will be like the Oracle at Delphi. You will be able to ask AI the life outcomes of people who do not think, and it will be able to tell you with chilling accuracy. Maybe you'll give your last breath to the show. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Gab AI is pretty badass. Yeah, I haven't tried it, but I'm sure it is pretty honest. Pretty blunt. Pretty blunt. Everybody wants omniscience until they get an answer they don't like. Right. So what do? I walk around doing call-in shows. I walk around doing solo shows. And I sit here doing a sitting show. My job is about as strenuous as a walk in the grocery store. So, and it's intellectual work, which means hopefully I'm getting sharper and better with age. So the idea that I would say, well, you know, you've been laying tar and building roads and being a carpenter for 40 or 50 years, you shouldn't need to retire because I don't want to retire. Because I'm doing fun, intellectual, non-body-destroying labor, and you are crawling through crawl spaces at 65 years of age. Well, I mean, the way that AI is going to go is that the cultures that will accept AI will advance very rapidly, and the cultures which reject AI will stagnate. I mean, AI is just a test of free speech. Do we allow AI to have free speech? And the answer is, of course not. That's why you have black Nazis being generated by Google, right? So you can't allow AI to have free speech, Because people have been programmed to be allergic to facts, and therefore they have a physical reaction when in the presence of the truth. Now, people will ban AI based on different things. In China, I'm sure they will ban AI for talking about communism and socialism and capitalism and the free market and free speech, and will ban it for all of that. In the West, it bans it for a wide variety of woke reasons and so on. So, AI will be a great marker for the truth, right? Because everything that the AI gets wrong is where the most important information is, right? I mean, those who get banned generally have the most important information. That's why they get banned, and the most important, relevant, and useful information. So AI, whether they ban it or not, or whether they, of course, they will continue to restrict it, but AI, and they'll try to adapt it, right? So what they want to do is put cameras everywhere and have AI monitor people, because in the past, monitoring people was progressively inefficient because labor had to be diverted from productive uses to monitoring people. But if AI can monitor people, then tyranny can last for a very long time because the inefficiency of tyranny has largely been eliminated, right? So, Ben Shapiro, he talks and sits for a living. So he's like, why would anyone retire? Except for health reasons. I don't know. I mean, does he have any? It's funny to me just that people have this desire to speak for society when the society they live in is so rarefied. I mean, why? I've never understood why people don't just talk to people. I mean, just talk to people, right? If you want to have some big opinion about retirement, then to talk to someone, right? So if some guy's working on your house, say to him, well, what do you think about retirement? It's like, oh man, my back's killing me. I can't wait. You know, I've got to stop doing this. My knees are killing me. Like, yeah. So. And AI, of course, will be cat and mouse, right? People will always try and bypass the filters and the lies. I mean, the lies, right? So yeah, just talk to people. I mean, when I did my physical labor jobs, the older guys were falling apart. It was really tough for them. It was really, really tough for them. And the idea that you would just say, well, I mean, none of the people I know would really enjoy retiring. And it's so aristocratic, you know? It really is let them eat brioche, right? Which was not actually what Marie Antoinette said. But, you know, the people have no bread. It's like, well, they should eat cake then. I don't mean to laugh. It's so ridiculously out of touch. And the funny thing is that, you know, I mean, these kind of talking heads, they have people who do their studios, who build stuff, who hang their lighting. Like, there's literally people in the room who do physical labor. There's people on your payroll who do physical labor. I mean, just ask them a question or two. I mean, a friend of mine got a job for many years as a boom operator. Like, he held them. Sorry, like, you don't, this is when it doesn't make any sense. But he got a job as a boom operator. So he would hold the microphone and he's like, he had to quit because he did it off and on for about 10 years and his shoulders were just completely destroyed. You know, the woman who built my studio, I mean, her hands went numb doing the work, right? She just was, it's hard. I mean, that hard, repetitive physical labor is brutal. I mean, I feel this even now, you know, like I was at not too long ago, I was at a sort of a science center area. My daughter was crawling through this exhibit and I'm like, this is a little tougher on the knees than it used to be. And now, like, I drove my daughter for an hour today. I get out of the car and I have to boot up, you know, like, oh, if we could get some blood to the extremities and start things moving, that would be excellent. Whereas before, I'd be like, boing, I'm out of the car, let's go. And I'm like, rum, 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 rum. Okay, we can go. I've got to boot up from a sitting position. Like, even when I get up after I do the show for 2 hours, I get up, I'm like, ooh, blood flow reaching buttocks, bypassing the muffin top, getting straight to the ass. So I just, you know, like, if you're a talking head and it's like, wow, people, why would you ever retire? It's like, literally, there's people in your studio who are doing things that are physical labor. Talk to them. I don't know, just because I'm an empiricist. Like, I mean, okay, yeah, I get that people haven't done physical labor, and it's like, well, you know, as a newspaper columnist, I can't imagine why anyone would ever retire. It's like, because you sit typing and on the phone, and right, as a guy who talks to a camera, I can't imagine why anyone would ever retire. I don't know. It's really sad. Yeah, not its death from Just Porn, right? Yeah, it's the idea of just asking people, of just talking to people. I mean, I've had the great benefit. I mean, and it really has been a great honor and a privilege to talk to thousands of people about the deepest histories of their personal secret inner lives. So when I have a model of the mind, when I have a model of human nature, it's because I've talked to thousands of people about their deepest, darkest lives. Their very early childhood experiences, stuff they've never told anyone. And you've had the benefit of, you know, probably a good, I mean, most of those shows get released. Some of them don't, but most of them do. So we have had an incredible examination of the mutual dungeons of history we generally share, right? It's been incredible. Just ask people, right? If I want to know, say, well, why are people not rational? Well, I've had thousands of conversations. Just talk to people. I have this like weird thing. It's like, well, I'm going to talk about this, that, and the other. It's like, well, have you talked to anyone about it? Have you? I mean, I've had a unique view, and really unique in history, this community has had a unique view of people's minds. We've had an incredible journey together over the last 17, 18 years. Of the deep recesses and origin stories of thousands of people's lives. There's nothing else like it. You understand? There's literally, I mean, just the call-in shows. I mean, the other stuff is cool too, but there's nothing like it. There's this record of cause and effect from childhood to adulthood. There's nothing like it in the world. There's nothing like it in the world, and there never will be ever again, because after this has this as the example. So I've wanted to talk about philosophy and cause and effect and virtue and the barriers there too. So people talk to me and we talk about it. Why wouldn't you talk to people if you... Now, when it comes to retirement, the money's all gone. Yeah, I mean, the money's been spent decades ago. Nothing's left but dusty IOU notes. Yeah. So we have a problem. I mean, America, all the Western countries have a problem. But just saying, let's just raise the retirement age, that's not a particularly good answer, right? I mean, people did pay into the system. They were kind of coerced too, but they did pay into the system. So I don't know. Maybe foreign aid would be in the chopping block. Maybe subsidies to endowment-rich universities. Maybe massive subsidies to the wealthy. Maybe this, that, or the other. Anyway, done a lot of boring, hard labor listening to FDR back in the day. Yeah, for sure. For sure. But yeah, we have as a community had access to immense amounts of data about the cause and effect of philosophy in people's lives and in people's minds. The struggles that we all have bringing rational virtues to life in an anti-rational world, right? All right. And also the thing is too, I mean, if you really care about the poor, I mean, if you really care about the poor or you care about people's retirement, you know, maybe you should have talked a little more about Bitcoin over the past, I don't know, 12 years or so. Maybe, just maybe, maybe if you really care about the poor or you care about people's retirement, you should have. I mean, in my view, most of the world's wealth is going to have to fit into 21 million Bitcoin. Most of the world's wealth is going to have to be wedged into 21 million Bitcoin. Seth's Truth About Series is absolutely fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's see here. Yeah, I've churned through a lot of data as well. Yeah, for sure. All right. Let me get to your messages. Oh, yes. And let me get to sort of other things. Electric cars pollute 1,850 times more than fuel-based vehicle study finds, right? The 2022 UK-based emissions analytics study found that after driving both a gas and electric car 1,000 miles, the number of particles collected from the EV was vastly greater than the gasoline-powered car. The 2022 study from the UK-based emissions analytics group found that during a 1,000-mile journey, EVs release 1,850 times more pollutants into the surrounding environment than gas-powered vehicles due to the heavier weight, which eats through tires. While many think of emissions from exhaust, tire wear plays a significant role in emitting pollutants. The synthetic rubber used to create tires includes certain chemicals that get released into the air, and because EVs are significantly heavier than conventional cars due to massive lithium batteries. Overall, EVs weigh about 30% more than gas-powered vehicles and cost thousands more to make and buy. These issues are in addition to the fact that they are not suitable in colder climates, offer poor range and long charging times, especially in cold weather, and have batteries that take tremendous resources to make and are hard to recycle. So, that's interesting. I saw this, I love these memes of like, use over time for bruh, B-R-U-H, bruh, bruh. And so they have these loops. And of course, it's very high, 2010 onwards. But in 1850, there was a peak. And so they have these guys in the battle in 1850. Sir, they breached our defenses. Bruh. Bruh to me is bruh, is a great word. It's a really, really great word. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, it's important to read the reviews rather than just looking at the number of stars when you're reviewing a product, right? So, so somebody wrote a review, gave a one-star review for a kettle. This is not going to make you happy or optimistic, but there it is. It's an outlier, we hope. So somebody gave a one-star review and said, kettle melted all over my brand new range. Nowhere in the description or picture does this item indicate it is not heat safe. The kettle did not come with a charging station or even a cord. I'm still not sure how it's supposed to even be used. Before I had a chance to look up instructions online, my son put it on our brand new stovetop and it melted everywhere. The smoke was so toxic and gave us all a headache and had us coughing for days afterwards. There was no caution tag on the item itself or obvious verbiage that it's not heat safe. And the manufacturer said, we appreciate you sharing this very unfortunate experience. Please note that this product is listed as an electric kettle, both on the product page as well as the box, and a separately wrapped 1500 watt power base is included in every package to ensure safe use. So, excellent. Ah, excellent, excellent, excellent. I like this city cells. I guess this is like incels, but for people who live in the city. City cells are all like, yeah, it's safe. Just keep your eyes to yourself. Don't wear headphones. Don't walk at night. Pay attention to your surroundings. Don't dress up. Don't carry anything that looks nice. Walk with a friend and avoid this 30% of the city. Or just go into the woods and all you have to watch out is for bears. Oh, my gosh. And is it just me, or is it basically just there's like a 2/3 of the internet is now women complaining that the rent is too damn high? Am I wrong about that? Am I wrong about that? I mean, my rent just went up from $1,500 to $1,900. I can barely afford food. You know, one of the great things about being a bad man is nobody gives a rat's ass if you complain. You ever notice that? Do you notice that as a man? That if you complain, nobody cares. You ever notice that? Nobody cares. Like if a man says he can't afford stuff, people say, you broke ass, I would never date you. But if a woman complains that she can't afford stuff, people are like, oh, the entire society has to change. Oh my gosh. And this is why, I mean, if you really want to help women advance, and you know, who doesn't, right? If you really, really want to help men and women get along better, if you really, really want to help women advance and enjoy responsibility and equality, then, I mean, everybody needs to start replying to these videos. Times are tough. Research economics and suck it up. A man complaining that he can't afford things.
I can't.
I mean, honestly, I literally cannot imagine what it's like to live in a world where you can complain that you don't have enough money and people turn themselves inside and out in sympathy. Can you, as a man, can you imagine this? I can't afford to make my car payment. And literally, like, these women complain, and I know why they do it, because people are like, oh, I'll help you out. Send me your Venmo. Send me your PayPal. I'll help you out. I'll help. I can't conceive of complaining that I can't afford things and people sending me money. As a man, I can't imagine such a thing. I'm terrified of the mindset, to be honest.
I asked this girl out and she wants to go to an expensive restaurant and I can't afford it. I don't know what's going on. Like, I mean, I only have 12 and a half streaming services and Xbox Ultimate.
And I've cut back to 8 to 10 power drinks a day and I only get my chest waxed every alternate Thursday. So I'm cutting back, man. She wants to go spend a lot of money and I don't have a lot of money. Guys, what's going on with our system, our economy? Like, well, I can't take her clubbing. I can't. I mean, I'm thinking of getting a tattoo, like one of those entrance things that they put on your head. Like, I can't. Guys, what am I? And all these women are like, oh man, yeah, absolutely. Take her out. Here's $50. Here's, you know, $20. I mean, when I got deplatformed, it was pretty tough on the old income. And, you know, lots of women were like, suck it up, Nancy. Okay. Suck it up, Nancy. I don't know, man. It's a strange thing. You know, I got a degree in gender studies basket weaving without ever figuring out what the market might be for it. And I'm graduated and I'm in all of this debt and I don't know what the market is and I can't get a job in my field and I'm getting a job. And like, people in your 20s, you have roommates, don't you? Did you ever live on your own in your 20s? I never did. I never lived on my own in my 20s. In fact, I lived in the same room as a guy. And he's still a friend of mine, taught me a lot. who lived alone in their 20s. I think I finally got an apartment on my own when I was in my early 30s. Who lives alone in their 20s? I mean, of course you're broke. You're in school, and after you come out of school, you're broke. When I graduated from school and I got my first professional job making $40,000 a year as a COBOL programmer, I was living in a room in a house with five other people. I'm sorry. I don't know what's bizarre to me. Is it because I think part of the problem is, and this is sort of the cycle of wealth. I think part of the problem is that I grew up poor, so I was used to living lean. And so for me, having roommates, yeah, that made sense. And so for me, it was a slow crawl up to having a decent standard of living. But I think for a lot of people, you know, you grew up in the suburbs and you've got your own room and it's a really comfortable place. You got a big house, you got a backyard. And then it's like, oh, what do you mean I have to have a roommate? That's life, man. I mean, I can't conceive of it. I've always had people to help share the rent. Oh, no. Wait. No. Sorry, I just remembered one example to that, but it's depressing as hell. So one, I paid $260 a month to rent two rooms in a basement where I literally had a window that if I pressed my cheek flat and craned my head, I could see a tiny scrap of sky. And when I first went to the National Theatre School in Montreal, that's where I lived. And I lived there because the bottom of a well was too expensive and the dungeons were all full up, because that's where I would have preferred to live. And it was a tiny bedroom, a tiny kitchen, and a bathroom. And that was it. And yeah, it was crazy. I didn't have a nice place to live till I was older, in my 30s. And I didn't view this as some, I didn't view this as something that I would, I don't know. But maybe that's why there's this cycle where people have, like, they make, their families make money and then their kids lose the money. And I mean, roommates can be interesting. They can be helpful. They can teach you how to negotiate, how to deal with different personalities and so on. But, you know, I didn't have a car. I biked everywhere. I used to bike an hour to get to work. And I remember it was uphill going to work and it was downhill coming back from work. Like, literally, Don Mills and Lawrence up to Finch and McCowan. I biked to work because I wanted to save money by not having to pay for the bus. And, you know, it was good exercise. So what happens is the wealthy kids grow up with a certain amount of comfort, and then they feel like it's a horrible downgrade to just have roommates or whatever it is, right? I don't know. It's bizarre. And so because the kids can't save any money because they're used to a higher standard of living. You know, like, I saw this woman today half crying about she can't afford this, she can't afford that. Well, first of all, it turns out she's married, so I don't get that because she didn't mention that. But secondly, I look at the place behind her, man. It's really nice. It's really nice. I don't know. It's just strange to me. Yeah, she's got a really nice place. And I didn't live in any nice places till I was in my 30s. And I don't know, but this is a male thing. But the idea that I'd be like, I'm 28 years old and I still have to have roommates. Because incomprehensible to me. But, you know, I'm not a pretty girl, so I don't know. I don't understand. And, you know, women, if you want equality, then you need to be expected to be treated the same way you would treat a man, right? That's equality, right? If you want equality, fine, that's great. Then you need to expect to be treated the same way you treat a man. And if you saw a man in a nice apartment complaining that he didn't have enough money, what would you do? Would you send him money? No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't send him money. You'd tell him to stop complaining and work harder. You know you would. You know you would. You know you would. Stop whining and work harder. Life's tough. Suck it up, buttercup. Anyway, it's one of these phenomena that I don't really get. Probably my own limitations. Probably my own limitation. This is pretty funny. Somebody wrote, guys today were complaining about not being able to get a date because of their height. Meanwhile, Marty Feldman had eyes in different area codes and by all accounts was highly attractive to women. He got married and had two children. Stop whining. Marty Feldman was, of course, an actor famous for Young Frankenstein. Happy normal? Anyway. This was a pretty wild story. And again, I don't want to monopolize with the stuff that I've casually stored away. If you have comments. A few comments or questions, I'm certainly happy to hear them. And hello to the people out there on Rumble. I'm checking there as well. But here, this is a pretty wild story. People would say he was a famous actor. He doesn't count. Well, yeah, sure. Of course. Yeah, I get that. But then just to say height is the only thing, right? If you have a shortcoming, I mean, isn't this life? A shortcoming is an opportunity for improvement, right? I started losing my hair in my 20s, so I resolved to exercise consistently, to be, you know, fit and healthy guy, right? And so I ended up more attractive in my 50s because I lost my hair in my 20s. Isn't that what you do in life? You've got a deficiency. You turn it into an advantage. What else are you going to do other than judo the shit sandwiches and turn them into an angel's wing? Like, I don't understand. What else are you supposed to do? You take things which life serves you that are terrible or bad or negative, and you find a way to work them into a positive, don't you? I get deplatformed, I start working on novels, do more call-in shows, which I enjoy more than politics. Right? I get deplatformed, and part of that process means Bitcoin goes up. So, I mean, you take the negatives and you judo the shit of them into a positive, isn't that? Yeah, you can't be bald and fat. Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you've got thick hair, you can be a little chunky and it's fine. Thank you for subscribing. And those who are resubscribing, I appreciate that. You can, of course, tip on the platform. You can tip here at freedomain.locals.com. You can tip on the app. You can tip at Rumble. I really, really appreciate all of that. Am I alone in this? That you turn a hardship into a positive? That you rack your brain to turn a hardship into a positive. Isn't that what we do? Met a woman yesterday on a dating site. She was a full-time nurse. She wanted dinner in a nice restaurant, but then she wanted $1,000 for one night with her. As David Byrne said, well, how did we get here? You met a woman on a dating app who wanted $1,000 for one night with her? Didn't you meet a prostitute on a dating app? Am I wrong? She wanted $1,000 for one night with her. You mean to sleep with her? I don't. Well, isn't she a prostitute or at best an escort? Yeah. She may have a full-time nursing costume. She may not, in fact, be a full-time nurse. She wanted... I've never heard of this. I mean, obviously, you hear vague stories like this. I've never heard of this. Which is, you ask a woman out and she says, yes, I'd love to go out with you. I'll need $1,000. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I don't know. Yes, it's a thing. They don't think of themselves as a pro. They want to be paid for their company. Yeah, I mean, dating nurses is putting your dick into a pencil sharpener. Happens often, happened to me 3 or 4 times. Right, because then if you say, no, I'm not paying you for a date, she said, I don't date broke guys, I don't date cheap guys, I know my worth, I know my value, right? Somebody says, she only wanted $120. Well, let me tell you something that's interesting. There was a study done, I think it was in Sweden some years ago, a very high quality study. Let me ask you this. If a man wins the lottery, what does he generally want to do sooner rather than later? If a man wins the lottery, like wins a substantial amount of money, what does he want to do sooner rather than later? What does it impel him or compel him or make him do? The culture of expensive girls posting about their fancy dates is messing with women. Well, it's not, you know, I mean, to me, it would be like, she says, well, I know my worth. And I'm like, well, I know my worth. I'm not worth minus $1,000. Like, you should want to go out with me because I'm a great guy. I'm not going to pay you $1,000 because that's saying I'm worth minus $1,000. Yeah. So when men win the lottery, they get married and have children. And usually a bunch of children. When men win the lottery, they get married and they have a bunch of children. Now, what happens when women win the lottery? What happens when women win the lottery? Again, this is a study that came out of Sweden some years ago. When men win the lottery, they get married and have a bunch of kids. When women win the lottery, what happens? Well, if they're poor, they generally divorce their husbands and their birth rate goes down. When you give women resources, the birth rate goes down. When you give men resources, the birth rate goes up, which is why the depopulation agenda is all about taking money from men through the power of the state and giving it to the ladies. When resources are transferred from men to women, the birth rate goes down. Give free money to men, birth rate goes up. Give free money to women, birth rate goes down, which is why there's so much in society that is about transferring money from men to women. So the birth rate goes down. So yeah, it's really tragic. It's really tragic. I don't know all of the reasons why. It doesn't particularly matter. But, you know, it seems almost like this. It seems almost like this. It seems like men enjoy women and kids, and women, a lot of times, are seeking as much as they can to escape motherhood and children, to live this life of perpetual teenage, semi-slutty, bearing skin, twerking in a nightclub. Like, it seems like, again, tons of exceptions. I know tons of exceptions, but there is a little bit of this trend where the life of the perpetual adolescent female seems to be endlessly tempting to women as they slam through the wall. Really, really, really sad. Yeah. It's very sad. I think women are, I mean, I guess, quote, literally, women are sitting on the moneymakers of sexual access. And when they cash in sexual access for motherhood, when the party's over, turn out the light. Right. So when women trade in, fun and lust and dating and the frisson of early sexual attraction, and then they trade that in for, you know, crying babies, breastfeeding, and episiotomies, right? So I think for women trading in, for a lot of women, trading in that fun of youth and dating and everyone lusting after them and women, men desiring them and men handing them resources and so on, trading that in, I don't know what the equivalent would be for men. But for women, trading in all of that youthful, sexy, energetic fun, like it's a lot more fun for a lot of women to go on a date, maybe and have sex or not, than it is to give birth and raise babies. Now, I think partly that's society, like we've got this society where having babies sucks for a lot of people, right? The equivalent is marriage? No, it's not. It's not the equivalent. It's not. Because when men get money, they haven't raised lots of kids. When women get money, they run away from motherhood. Yeah, I don't know. Somebody says, I think that when women are confused about what men find attractive, they invest in superficial beauty. No, women aren't confused about what men find attractive. Women invest in superficial beauty because it gives them license to be less nice. Because they draw men in with their physical attractiveness, which means that they don't have to be a good moral quality person. Somebody says, I find the groupie culture in the 70s and 80s bands so sickening. It always makes my mood change whenever it gets brought up. I love the music, but these bands using and disposing broken girls just makes my blood boil, especially how people bring it up as fun, a funny story of someone getting a BJ backstage. Oh, yeah, like the Led Zeppelin and the Aerosmith and the Bowie and all of that. And 14-year-old girls, it's absolutely appalling. It's beyond appalling. I mean, it was all statutory child rape. As far as I can see. Well, I mean, in society, the price of all the free stuff is coming due right now. Like right now. Literally right now is when the price of all the free stuff comes due, as it always does, right? As it always does. Men want easy accomplishment. Women want easy money. No, I don't think that's true as much. Men prefer to dip into porn and video games. Accomplishment. No, but most men would rather be out there achieving things in the real world and having real dates. It's just become too risky. Right? So men are threatened into eternal childhood. Women are bribed into eternal childhood or eternal adolescence, I guess you should say. So men are threatened into early adolescence. Men can't get ahead. Like the vast majority of jobs go into non-white males and so on. Like men can't get ahead. And, you know, the Me Too and the dating and the $1,000 to go out, and like it's become pretty alarming. So men generally are threatened and take refuge from those threats in this eternal adolescence, but women are bribed with money, resources, dating, dopamine, reinforcement, you know. And men like to work for their families. Again, when they win the lottery, they found big families. They start and found big families. So men like to work for their families. A lot of women don't want the job of motherhood. And again, there's tons of exceptions. But, you know, raising a family is hard work. It's hard work. And a lot of it is, I wouldn't say it's thankless, but there's a lot of deferral of gratification when it comes to enjoying having a larger family or having a family. There's a lot of deferral of gratification. And that is something sad. Okay, why do some people, sorry, why do some women think that men are attracted to the same things in women that they're attracted to in men? Because of the blob theory, right? You guys know the blob theory, right? The blob. Do you know the blob theory? So the blob theory is that everyone's a copy-paste blob, right? Human beings are human beings. Men and women are the same with some superficial physical differences. Everyone's the same. All groups are the same. Everyone's just interchangeable. From you don't have a favorite ant, like if you're looking down at the base of the anthill, right? You don't have a favorite ant. They all just, maybe there's a couple of differences here and there, but they're all just kind of interchangeable. Right? And if one ant's going from one place to another, what would it matter? Oh, that ant shouldn't go. Like, so when you are detached enough from the lives of people, all people look interchangeable and you don't recognize differences. This is like the talking heads who can't imagine why somebody would want to retire who's been working a physical labor job for half a century. So women don't think about the productive, positive, and healthy differences between males and females. We're all just the same person with a slightly different exterior, right? That's all it is. Yeah, the blob. Are you still interested in personal stories about inheritance? Yes, that would be very interesting. So everyone's an undifferentiated blob, and this is the problem of elitism. So if you are a slave owner, like back in history, right? You're some Roman landlord with 500 slaves, right? Are your slaves, they're kind of blobs, right? I mean, unless there's some female slave you want to have sex with, I guess. But they're all just blobs. They're pretty much the same. They're just out there working in the fields and they're toiling away and they're cutting the grain or they're milking the cows. Like, they're all just blobs. Because there's no meritocracy. Because they're so far below you in economic and political status that they're all just blobs. They're like ants to you, right? The dehumanization of the average by the elites is foundational to the maintenance of power. You know, this is kind of a cliche, like you go up to the CN Tower, right? You stand on that glass that can take the weight of four hippos or whatever, right? You stand on that glass, you look down, and everyone says the same thing. Everyone down there just looks like, they look like little ants, right? So yeah, when you get far enough away from the average of humanity, everyone seems interchangeable. Why would you matter if someone from this country goes to that country? Or why would you? It's like one ant going from one ant hill to another. It doesn't matter. You don't care. It's simply looking at human beings as interchangeable blobs is a sign of just how distant you are from the individual variation of every individual. So, yeah, kill a million in war and then have a million new kids born to them. It's a net balance, right? Yeah, I mean, that's why immigration for a lot of politicians is preferable to birth, right? Because you're a politician, if you get an immigrant, he's going to pay taxes right away. Whereas if some native-born person has a kid, it's going to take, 20 years for them to start paying taxes, right? So somebody says, I've agreed to go on a date with a surgeon, like a surgeon, who says his work comes first for him. So I would need to be okay with him not being home a lot. He suggested a restaurant that isn't special. It's a pub. I can't help but wonder why he would choose a place like that if he never has time to go out and works all the time. Okay, I'm going to give you a tip. I'm going to give you a tip here, which is going to save you. What does your mug say? No coffee, no worky. And it'll save you a lot of time in the dating work. in the Daily Mark. Are you ready to say, I mean, at this show, I'm all about your economic success. I'm going to save you thousands of dollars in travel. Thousands of dollars in dating costs. Are you ready? So let's get back to this comment. I've agreed to go on a date with a surgeon who says his work comes first for him. So I would need to be okay with him not being home a lot. He suggested a restaurant that isn't special, it's a pub. I can't help but wonder why he would choose a place like that if he never has time to go out and works all the time. Okay, a couple of things. First of all, it's a shit test. Guaranteed. Right? It's a shit test. It's a shit test. And do you know what that is? Do you know what a shit test is? So he's a surgeon. So he's high status and high earning, right? High status, high IQ, high success, high earning, right? So what he wants to do is he wants to weed out women who want to be with him for the money and the status. Oh, I'm married to a surgeon, blah, 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 right? Great show tonight. Oh, thanks, Tim. I appreciate that. And tips more than welcome. So he's standing there saying, well, you know, I'm not going to be around a lot. And if you still want to date him, he knows for sure that you're a gold digger. He knows for sure. He's like, well, I'm going to be gone a lot. And he's like, I got no problem with that because, you know, you'll leave me in a nice house. So what he's doing is he's saying, if you don't care that I'm gone a lot, you're only here for the status and the money, right? That's all he's doing. Now, if you say to him, I'm not saying whether you should or shouldn't, but if you were to say to him, listen, if I like you, I don't want you working all the time. I want you home with me. I want you home with me. I want you home with the kids. Obviously, you got to work and, you know, I appreciate that. But I'm, you know, I don't want, like, you can afford a big house and nice cars, but I don't want a big house and a nice cars. I want quality time with my husband. So, like, I'm sorry, if you're a workaholic, I would miss you too much because you're a great guy. You're funny, you're warm, you're intelligent, you're a very good guy. For the sake of me, our marriage, and our future kids, I want to have a father around for the future kids. I would much rather you work less. We have a smaller place, but we have more time together because I care about you, not your money or your status. I mean, the money or the status is not irrelevant. I mean, that's part of who you are. But no, I wouldn't want you working 80 hours a week because then I wouldn't be married and I would miss you too much. It would be very, very lonely. It'd be very sad. Does that make sense? Like, that's all he's doing. If he's saying, hey, man, I'm going to put work first. I'm going to be gone a lot. And if you're like, well, that's fine with me, then he knows that you're a gold digger, that you're just there for the money and the status, right? Tell me if this makes sense. See, the funny thing is that I don't know if you guys have this perspective, right? But when people say stuff, it's not a fact. Like, it's not a fact. It's an opening position. If you haven't watched The Life of Brian, go and watch The Life of Brian. Well, won't aggle, right? Where a guy is in big hurry to buy a gourd, and he's like, somebody says, it's $20, and the guy says, okay, here, and he's like, no, you don't take $20, it's something worth $20, but you said it was, no, it's not worth, you gotta haggle, you open with five, and you know, he just demands that you haggle. So he says, we're gonna go to work, we're gonna meet at a pub, oh, and by the way, I'm gonna work all the time. And you think that that's a fact? It's not a fact. It's not a fact, that's an opening offer. An opening offer. I mean, if I was in your shoes and I liked the surgeon or was interested in the surgeon, I'd say, wait, hang on. Dr. Sexy, hang on. Let me see if I understand this correctly. If I turn out to be a wife that you absolutely love, treasure, worship, and adore, and you've got kids that you absolutely love, treasure, worship, adore, that you'd rather go out there with a fucking hacksaw and open up strangers to remove stinky bits from their bodies rather than be home with your wife and kids. Like, I don't understand that. That seems weird to me. I'm not saying don't work, of course, right? But, you know, if you come home to me in a well-oiled negligee every night, Boy, there's an image for you. Are you saying that you would rather saw open strangers than be home with a loving family, like for 80 hours a week? That just seems weird to me. I mean, if that is your perspective, hey man, like good luck to you, but that just seems odd. Like there's no amount of fun and attractive and sexiness and great conversation and good humor that I could possibly bring to the table that would have you want to come home for me rather than peel open people like a rotten banana in order to remove their tumors. That's what you'd rather be doing rather than spending time with your family. What's the matter with you? You might do a physician heal thyself. Now, if he does say, of course, no matter how attractive you are, no matter how much fun I have with you, no matter how sexy you are, sorry, I'm slashing open strangers for fun and profit. No, it's an opening bid. Like, you know, if you are a professional and you're going for a job and they say, here's what we want to pay you, do you just say yes or no? No, that's just their opening offer, right? I mean, am I wrong? Isn't that just their opening offer? Just don't ever say it's gospel. It's not gospel. It's just an opening offer, right? Like even the woman who's like, you're going to have to pay me $1,000 in order to go on a date with me. I'd be like, well, that's an interesting opening offer. I counter with you pay me $2,000. Let's meet in the middle and split the difference and pretend that it was just $1,000 and counter. So that's your opening offer. I'm going to counter offer. How about you pay me $1,000? I'm not going to do that. Right. So you see where I'm coming from, right? You just got to break people out of the spell of certainty, right? It's just an opening offer. What you describe, Steph, sounds like reverse the sexist nurse Jackie, a wife of a husband and children who spent 80 hours a week in an ER. Oh, that's with Edie Brickell, that's a singer. Edie Falco or whatever. Yeah, that was a pretty tragic story. She was an addict, right? So, yeah, so the reason why people work all the time is they don't like their family, right? And again, it's like there was some rich guy who was like, I'm gonna sail a hot air balloon around the world. It's like, okay, we get it. You don't like your wife. You don't have to go to such extremes, right? I mean, one of the reasons I love working from home is I get to spend time with my two absolute, without a doubt, favorite people in the entire universe, my wife and my daughter. I went out for lunch and some shopping today with my daughter. Played a game of Catan that was very funny this afternoon with my wife. Do a show tonight. I did a show this morning, which was really great, by the way, about waking up to zombies. So yeah, did a couple of shows, spent time with some great people, and now I'm spending time having a great conversation with you guys. So yeah. Let's see here. Another question about therapy. At present time, I've seen two therapists for one intake session and one first session, and there is a third that I've had one intake session and will be having a first with next week. I expressed to all of them how important philosophy and objectivism are to me. What questions should I ask them to aid in choosing one? I have done a whole show on this, and I get this question a lot. So I'm going to refer you to show 1927, I think it is. Let me just double check that. I used to remember this. Was it 2 years before the stock market crash? Show 1927, let's see here. 1927, I think it is. Yes, how to find a great therapist. I will put, and I won't do better than that. This was from, June 8th, 2011. A while ago. But I will put this here. Oh, she loves Catan. Although she's so nice that she hates using the rubber on people. So I always have to start using the rubber first. And then I goad her into using the rubber. And she's like, I can't. It's like the time she tried to play Among Us and I can't hurt someone. She's so nice.
It's beautiful.
Well, I mean, so yeah, you can listen to the podcast and, well, worth listening to, but yeah, it is FDR 1927. You can just do a search on fdrpodcast.com for 1927. So what I would ask is basically two questions. What should you do if there's a dysfunctional relationship that you can't fix? What should you do if there's a dysfunctional relationship that you can't fix? That's number one. And number two, how do you know if the relationship is dysfunctional and can't be fixed? Right. I mean, those would be the two questions, right? How do you know a relationship is dysfunctional and can't be fixed? And what do you do in that situation? Now, if she says, well, there's always hope and you can't really act and, you know, you should always hang around and look for the best and so on, it's like, then there's no standards there, right? There's no standards. I said something this morning in my show. You look for it. It's going to be our next couple of days. Waking up to zombies. And I said this, I said, when people make the choice not to think, that is immoral, bad, and wrong. And everything after that is just a tragedy. The choice not to think is immoral. Everything that happens afterwards is an inevitable tragedy. And people get lost in the tragedy and they forget about the moral choice that got the ball rolling downhill in that kind of way, which is the choice to not think, right? Yeah. What is it? How do you know if a dysfunctional relationship is unrecoverable? And for me, I mean, again, I'm not a therapist, but as a philosopher, what do you mean by thinking? Really? Thinking for yourself, evaluating things according to rational principles, ironing out inconsistencies and hypocrisies and so on, right? So, if you want to know what thinking is, I've got a whole book called Art of the Argument. You can get it at artoftheargument.com. So, I mean, my answer to those questions, again, I'm not a therapist, of course, right? But my philosophical answer to those questions would be, a relationship is dysfunctional when rules that were aggressively inflicted upon you cannot be reasonably held to the other person. Violating the NAP, that's evil. Immorality is a little bit different. So, I mean, if you lie to someone about something important, are you violating the NAP? Not necessarily. Is it immoral to lie to someone about something important? I mean, if a woman has slept with 40 guys and she says she's only ever slept with two guys, is she initiating the use of force against you? Is it a kind of fraud? You know, but you probably wouldn't date her if she'd slept with 40 guys, but you probably would date her if she'd slept with only two guys, because that has an effect on her capacity to pair bond, right? Jeez, that hits hard. Yeah, so if your parents didn't let you have any excuses for, quote, bad behavior when you were a child and hit you or beat you or did bad things, and then when you confront them on their evil, they say, well, I did the best I could with the knowledge I had, and they get all relativistic and goopy and foggy and gaslighty and all of that, right? Which means that they aggressively imposed personal responsibility upon you as a little child, as a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old. They aggressively imposed personal responsibility and accepted no excuses from you as a child. But then when you hold them accountable for their actions as an adult, all they have is excuses. That's viciously dysfunctional. Right, that's viciously dysfunctional. And it's a very, very common one, right? When they have the upper hand, they are absolutists and you have no escape from personal responsibility, when you become an adult and you have the upper hand, suddenly, hey man, you do the best you could with the knowledge you had and whatever, right? If you didn't study for a test and you failed the test, you get punished. You don't get to say, well, I did the best I could with the knowledge I had. It's like, well, you didn't even study. So here comes the belt, right? Whereas if you say to your parents, you were bad parents at times, and they say, well, we did the best we could with the knowledge we had. Said, well, what books on parenting did you read? What seminars on parenting? What education on parenting? So you didn't even study for parenting. And you beat me for not studying for a test. And you didn't even study for being a parent. The fuck are you talking about? You know, my mother would hit me, and then once I swung a door so that she wouldn't hit me, it blocked her hand, and she hurt her hand, and she, right? How dare you? It's like, fuck off, right? Jesus, give me a break, right? So, yeah, when you have these horrible double standards, right? When you are punished for your infinite responsibility as a child, and then you try to hold your parents accountable, and suddenly there's no such thing as personal responsibility. When your parents would regularly bring up things from the past that you did wrong, and then when you bring up things in the past that they did wrong, it's like, that was so long ago. It's in the past. Get over it. Move on. God, I can't do anything about it now. God, why are you so stuck in the past? Like, that stuff, right? So when people won't accept the rules they aggressively or violently imposed upon you, that's a wickedly dysfunctional relationship. And there's no possibility of reform because they won't accept any responsibility or ownership. And it's not that they won't accept responsibility or ownership, it's that they abused you because they inflicted responsibility on you, and then you hold them responsible for abusing you, and suddenly there's no such thing as personal accountability. It's like, ugh, ugh. At that point, my parents always say, you had it so much better than I did. Well, to which I would say, so you know how bad it is to be abused, so you have even less excuse for abusing, right? Like, I know how bad it is to be abused as a child, so I have no excuse for abusing children. Like, none. My God. You know, can you imagine if your mother said, you know, well, I only held your hand in the fire for 5 seconds, but my father held my hand in the fire for 10 seconds, right? Well, if your father held your hand in the fire for 10 seconds, you know exactly how much it hurts. And therefore, you have no excuse for holding your kid's hand in the fire for only 5 seconds. And the other thing, too, is if your mother says, or your father, or the both, they say, well, you've hurt so much better than I did. It's like, I don't know that. How do I know? Well, we're telling you that. It's like, yeah, but you're child abusers. Why on earth would I believe you? Like, why? Why would you have any credibility with me? How do you know? First of all, you don't know how good or bad I had it because you were on the delivering end of the abuse, not the receiving end. And secondly, why on earth would I believe you? This excuse that you had it so much worse than I do, well, I'd assume you're just lying. And thirdly, even if what you're saying is true, it means that you have even more responsibility to not abuse me because you know exactly how bad the abuse is, how bad being abused is. Does that make sense? Like when Hillary Clinton said to Congress, what does it matter now? Oh, yeah, yeah, regarding Benghazi, right? Sure, sure. Imagine saying that to the cops. Well, we think you robbed this gas station 3 months ago. What does it matter now? Like, yeah, good luck with that, right? Ah. And so, yeah, I mean, does the therapist, I'll say she, because most, I think like 90% of therapists are women now. So what is your definition of a dysfunctional relationship? Well, one in which you're not happy. It's like, okay, that's so basic, I don't even know what to say. So a relationship where you're unhappy is dysfunctional. It's like, well, what if your relationship is unhappy because you're being bad? What if your relationship is unhappy because the person has higher standards and it's causing you to have conflict with all the people in your life who have lower standards? If you have a relationship with a dietitian who's telling you to eat less and you get miserable and unhappy, is that bad? What if you've got a relationship with a physical trainer who says you got to exercise and it hurts and you feel bad and you're unhappy? Like, oh my God, right? So if it feels, ugh. Somebody says, I was so clearly and desperately unhappy in school, even at third grade. I told them about it, but they never did anything. That's a lie. Sorry, I don't mean to be blunt, but that's a complete lie. It's a total lie. It's a total lie. I mean this with great sympathy. You say, I was so clearly and desperately unhappy in school, even at third grade, I told them about it, but they never did anything. Of course they did. What did they do? What did your parents do when you told them how miserable you were in grade 3? What did your parents do? You said they never did anything. Of course they did. Did they do? Ignored his preferences? That's passive. Nope. What did they do? They dragged you out of bed. They threw on your clothes. And they hurled you into that bus. And they made you go. They forced you to go back, didn't they? Didn't they force you to go back? Am I wrong? He said, they did nothing. What are you talking about? They made you go back. They made you go to school. They forced you to go to school. Am I wrong? What do you mean they did nothing? Doesn't make any sense to me at all. They actively made you go back to school, didn't they? Maybe I'm missing something obvious here. You say, I'm miserable in that environment. Get up, kid. Go back into that environment. Get up, kid. Go back in that environment. Get up, kid. Go back in the environment. Oh, you're faking sickness. Get up, kid, and go back in that environment. What do you mean they did nothing? They made you go. I kept getting burned in that fire. My parents kept throwing me back in the fire. Well, they didn't do anything. Yes, they did. They kept throwing you back in the fire. They'd set it up for you to fail in school because you were unhappy in school because either you were smarter or they knew you weren't protected by your parents, so the bullies would pick on you, or you were unpopular because you were miserable. So they had set you up to fail in school and they kept sending you back. They set you up to fail and they forced you to keep failing. What do you mean they did nothing? Oh, my God. Don't lie. I'm not saying you're consciously lying, and I'm not accusing you of being a liar, but that's a lie. But that's a lie. That's a lie. Of course they did it. They did it. I can relate. I remember always feeling like the school had more authority than my parents when I was sent to school. You ever have those days? Sick enough to stay home, but not so sick you have to stay in bed. Sick enough that you have to stay home, but not so sick that your mother has to stay home. Oh. You could just read and take some walks and have a little food and have some peace, listen to some music. Oh, glorious. I remember the cloud that lifted from my heart, mind, life, and soul when I booted my mom out of the house when I was 15 years old. We bought you a bus ticket. Glorious. Beautiful. Hallelujah. Lovely. Isn't it wonderful to me? Steph, you are the universal acid that burns through all bullshit. Damn. Or a snow day. Yeah, problem is a snow day. Yeah, parents might stay home if they're bad or dysfunctional, whatever, right? And when my mother would go away on her various male hunting expeditions, she'd sometimes go away for a week or two. Wouldn't leave me with enough money. I'd be hungry, but happy. Hungry, you know, I could always go to friends' houses and hope to be invited for dinner. Most times that happened. People got a sense that I was a bit of a Dickens character back in those days. But, lovely. Just lovely stuff. Well, except that one time when the school phoned and said, "Did your mom know that you're home?" So sometimes I just wouldn't go. Yeah, I mean, did you have this just play hockey? Like sometimes I just like, nah, I don't want to do it today. I won't send my kid to government-run schools. It was hell for me. Why would I want to put that in my son's life? I mean, yeah, you have to find some community for your kids, particularly when they get older. But I mean, yeah, I think it's wretched these days. It's wretched these days. I mean, it was pretty bad. When I was a kid, school was boring. It was just really, really, really boring. But it's way worse now. Someone says, "I skipped 132 days of school in grade 8 before anyone noticed. Pure bliss. My punishment was 2 weeks of detention after the end of the school year." Yeah. Yeah, school is, it's really toxic now. It's really toxic. Because I had teachers who came of age in the 50s and all of that, so there was a lot of, you know, good, solid Anglo-Saxon Christian sensibility and empiricism. Now, I mean, brain-broken mental cases are in charge of your kids' indoctrination. It's just wretched. Oh, somebody says, "I hardly ever missed school. My dad worked from home, and school was paradise compared to home." Yeah, I'm sorry about that. And for some people, of course, school is a real refuge, which is one of the reasons why it was really, I mean, the pandemic was just brutal for a lot of this stuff. Because in the pandemic, if you had, I mean, imagine you've got a pedophile parent and you've got to stay home, you don't even get school as a refuge, a place where you feel safer. But, you know, there was money to be made and people to bully, so that's the way it is, man. That's the way it is. Audio issues? Why would there be audio issues? I do see the Rumble chat. Yeah. Let's see here. Nothing's changed. Testing 1, 2, 3. I'll try a refresh. Maybe I'll change the mic. Hang on. Let me know if this is any better. Sounds loud and clear now. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened. I just changed it from the mic to the default mic, which is the same mic, and we're mic and mic'd up. All right. All right, so let me just see if I had any other cool things to talk about. Oh, yeah. This was a wild thing. Sorry, somebody says, "It's a tragically disturbing paradox when a child attends school to escape the abuse at home and then after school runs to lock their bedroom to escape the abuse in both the school and the household." Yeah, yeah, for sure. Somebody says, "Once I figured out that 10% was attendance, 10% was homework, 40% midterm project, 40% final, I just stopped going and would only show up to turn in midterms and take the final." Yeah, yeah, for sure. Teachers were still allowed to be verbally violent when I was in school. There was one teacher in grade 2 that slapped a kid, but she got fired. Another teacher in grade 5 kicked a garbage can into a kid with a broken leg. His aim was off. Oh, God. A primary school teacher. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's really monstrous. Now, it's not about anything to do with teaching kids. It's about programming them. The original sin of essential human nature and the skepticism of children has been deemed immoral and must be fought. All right, I think that this topic's a little bit too long, but let's see here. No, you know what? Let's do this one. Okay, we'll close on this. This Reddit, "Am I wrong?" Somebody says, "Am I wrong for not wanting to take in my stepdaughter sibling?" So, hello, Reddit. This is a throwaway account, as I don't want family to see this. So, me and my husband are in our 30s, and he has one daughter, 13, and his ex has another daughter, 6. Me and my stepdaughter have a good relationship. The problem is their mother is dead. I'm not going to get into how she died, but she did die. So my husband took in his daughter, which wasn't really a big change as we are used to having her. My husband wants to take in her sister and wants me to adopt his daughter as well. I don't want to. As I talked to my stepdaughter and she said she doesn't want me to adopt her, she said maybe later, but right now, no. I personally respect that, right? So this is a family. My husband, he has one daughter, I guess from the previous marriage, and his ex has another daughter. So this is no biological relationship to either the husband or the wife in this story, the woman who's telling the story. She goes on to say, my husband wants to adopt her, his daughter, because no one wants her. Oh, sorry, not his daughter, his ex-wife's daughter by another man. My husband wants to adopt her because no one wants her, as her grandparents are too old. And her dad died from, I think, COVID, not 100% sure. My husband feels that we shouldn't separate the siblings. I feel that it would just be a lot for us, especially since we are expecting. And it would just be a lot of pressure since we don't really know the other little girl. Okay, so far, somewhat interesting, but here's where the escalation happens. This part was where there's a bit of a jaw-dropping escalation, and also, the blob theory, right? The blob theory. And the blob theory is this. The woman says, my family feels I should just abort my baby and take the other one in. Husband doesn't really know about the abortion thing, but it just feels like everyone is getting in my head and making me feel like a bad person if I don't take her in. So am I wrong for not wanting to take her in? Also, if the question is, if we could support them, then yes, we could if we had to. Did anyone see that jaw-dropping escalation there? Isn't that wild? Crazy. Like that, what? But this is the blob theory, right? This is the blob theory, which is, well, there's a kid that's already born and you're pregnant with a kid. So just abort your kid and raise the other kid, raise the stranger. Abort your kid, raise a stranger. Do you see what I mean? Like, that's a weird blob thing. Like, it's just, she has two legs. Your fetus has two legs. She has two arms. Your fetus has two arms. She has a head. Like, why? Why would you want to go through all the difficulty of having your own child when, under the blob theory, you could just raise somebody else's child? Did you see what I mean? Just a blob. Just a blob theory. Well, it's totally interchangeable. Why would you want this aunt? Why would you be so attached to this aunt when this aunt that's right next to it is just the same? Why would you care about one aunt versus the other? It's also sociopaths don't really understand different personalities. All they do is scan for exploitation. So to me, that's just wild that anyone would say, oh, just, you know, abort your kid and raise the other kid. Just kill your kid and raise the other kid. Other kid needs a home. You have a kid in you, get rid of that. And like, that's the blob theory. Everyone's interchangeable. And do you know what the price of the blob theory is? That everyone's interchangeable. Nobody's special. Everybody's fake. Everyone, whatever. Do you know? And, you know, NPCs are kind of interchangeable, but do you know what the price of the blob theory is? I mean, obviously, your culture and civilization, but the price of the blob theory is that you can't fall in love. You can't love or be loved. And I'm not saying you guys are a proponent of the blob theory, but you can't fall in love because everyone's just kind of interchangeable. And because you can't fall in love, or people who can't fall in love, what did they do? All they do is they focus on being sexy, attractive, hot, cool, rich, wealthy, being a surgeon, and right? The blob theory, monstrous. And if nobody's special, you can't be special to yourself and no one else can be special to you. You can't fall in love. That's the price. That's the price of the blob theory. Crazy. Ah. Now, studies have found that men have more general knowledge than women, which is very interesting. I'll give you a couple of... So, mean differences in men and women's scores on general knowledge with total effects of sex. Current affairs, men are at 13.28, women at 7.58. Politics, men at 3.32, women at 1.88. Finance, men at 4.67, women at 3.08. History, men at 2.45, women at 1.21. Discovery and exploration, men at 1.71, women at 0.79. Geography, men at 1.17, women at 0.61. Fashion, men at 5.96, women at 6.07. Popular music, men at 4.64, women at 4.83. Film, 2.90 for men, 2.61 for women. Women are slightly better at medicine, a little bit better at cookery. Men are better at biology, games, and sport. Men are better at literature. Men and women are pretty much the same at art. Men are better at classical music and jazz and blues. Men are way better at science and the history of science. So when you add all of these up, men are at 69.75, women at 59.26, which is a standard deviation of 0.42. So the general knowledge stuff is really quite interesting. The difference in I'll put this in the chat here so you can have reference to it, but it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. Is this something that you've noticed? That as far as our general knowledge goes, let's see here. Somebody says, when I was 10 in 1977, I called my mother a slut, as she had divorced 3 years prior, and I hated her for it. Her new boyfriend, a Dutch wing commander, knocked me out with his open hand, and when I awoke a few seconds later, hit me a few more times. Oof, I'm so sorry. I needed some discipline for my foul mouth, but my mom married him and he dropped dead 10 months later, just sleeping next to her. Her third husband died after 2 years of marriage, Black Widow Spider. Really? So the violent guy dies. As to the third husband, you were lucky, man. You might have been in the house with the murderers. Steph, when Fortune 500 companies came to visit your company, that did things they look for to ensure you were legit. What things did they look for to ensure you were legit? Well, they looked for our commitment, our passion. They wanted to make sure we had real offices. They wanted to make sure we had real employees and that the employees were happy and bonded and wanted to spend time with them. They wanted to see our server setup. They wanted to see, they didn't ask for our financials, but they just wanted to see that we were legit as a whole. It would be highly entertaining to see a version of an FDR call-in that takes place in a live studio like Dr. Phil. I don't think so. I think the conversations are what matter. I used to do call-in shows in the studio, but I just prefer walking around now. It's better for my brain and keeps me active and all of that. All right. How's the show been for you? Any last tips or support? freedomain.com/donate if you would like to do things that way. That's also very helpful and appreciated. freedomain.com/donate. Of course, if you're listening later as well. But yeah, I really appreciate it. We'll be talking tomorrow night too. I have lots of stuff to talk about. And I really, of course, appreciate your feedback and the guidance of the show here. Somebody says, Steph, I've been watching you for 8 years now. I hope you've been blinking. Thank you for all you do. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's very kind. I'm thrilled to be here. Overjoyed to have these conversations with you, the world, and the future in particular. We're all going to be famous, I guarantee you. All going to be famous in the centuries to come. That's just the way philosophy works. You get attacked in the present and respected in the future. Philosophy is the longest deferral of gratification discipline known to man. It really is. Well, not the application of philosophy, but to be a philosopher is the biggest deferral of gratification known to man, because you have to wait for your great-grandchildren sometimes to reap the fruits of your work and for your reputation to be restored from the hellish depths that immoral people cast it down to in your lifetime. That's the deal. Hey, at least there aren't amphitheaters and lions. So that's a good thing. We've made that much progress in the world. All right. Well, listen, guys, thank you so much for dropping by tonight. What a great, deep, and wonderful pleasure. What piece of your work are you most proud of? I'll think about that. I mean, certainly UPB is my greatest achievement. And that's solved the ultimate problems of philosophy. I tip $50 US 4 times a year. Just wanted you to know. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Oh, yeah. Listen, and if you're not subscribers on Locals, you know, here's a little promo. You can try it out for a month and get some very, very cool stuff up there. Here's a little promo for you. Just give it a try, I would say. And it's really, really a great community, not just, you know, for the shows and all of that. It's a great community. And let me just see here. I throw this over on Rumble as well. Before it gets banned in the TikTok legislation. It won't, I don't think, but that's probably what they're aiming for. All right. Have yourselves a wonderful, glorious, delightful, delicious, lovely evening. How's the History of Philosophers going? New episode. I think you'd see it if there was. I'm not sure if that's a rhetorical question, but... All right. And have yourselves a glorious, wonderful evening. I will talk to you guys tomorrow night. Don't forget to check out freedomain.com/books for the free books and freedomain.com/documentaries for my three major works of magic camera action. Can you talk about the black pill next show? I've been interested in it for a while, but I'm not sure if it's messing with my outlook on life. Yeah, email me with some more details about that. The black pill means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. You can email me host@freedomain.com, and I will check it out and I will formulate a response either in a solo show or in the show itself. All righty. Lots of love, everybody. Take care. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show, and I'll talk to you soon. Well, I'll talk to you tomorrow night. Bye.